Okay. First, before we begin, a few administrative issues. Just to make sure you're in the right place, my name is Barry Robinson, and I'm talking about the Get of Cleves and Insanity. My wife Susan is here. If you have any questions about Insanity, she is, having lived with me for many years, she's an expert. Second, you should know I am not a member of the mental health professionals. I am not a doctor of any sort. I teach at the Ida Crown Academy. We're going to look at this from a halachic standpoint. I may not use terminology that is medically correct or politically correct, so I hope you forgive me if those of you out there are members of that profession. I know that insanity is not a laughing matter, even though we tend to make jokes about it, but it's quite a serious issue. The other thing is, we are, as it says on the sign on the door, this track is the Machshava track. Now, when they asked me originally what my topic fit into, they said we have halacha, we have Machshava, we have history. Which one do you fit in? And I said, yes. Because the truth is, it's in all of them. But I guess they heard the word insanity, they said, oh, Machshava, because it has to do with thinking of some sort. Also, at any point, ask questions. We'll do this informally. Whenever you want to raise a question, either about the terminology that I'm using, sometimes I go a little fast, sometimes I use terms that I'm very familiar with, but you may not be, so ask a question. Don't be afraid of asking a question. And I hope you enjoy the topic, because, as we say in davening every day, learning should be enjoyable. Learning Torah is enjoyable. We say, please, Hashem, make the words of the Torah sweet. We want to enjoy it. That is what Torah should be. It should be enjoyable, not a burden. Okay, so let's begin. And I will tell you, I'm going to go rather quickly through the beginning part of this till we get to the meat of the topic. Now, in Tanakh, if you think about all you know about Tanakh, do we have any situations where we talk about the word meshuggah, the word shota? Can you think of any instances? I've given you three. There actually are many more. Yes. Source material. You know, they said... Okay, actual or feigned. So there could even be feigned. That's one of the cases. David HaMelech feigned insanity to get away from Achish, right? That's paragraph number 3 on the first page, if you have them. They're supposed to... Let's go through the three little examples that I gave you. First of all, in the Torah you will not find the word shote. The Torah uses the word meshugah, which is a Hebrew word. People don't realize it. They think it's a Yiddish word sometimes, meshuggah. But meshuggah is a term used in the Torah, and the first time it appears is in the Tochacha in Devarim, and that's paragraph number 1 on page 1, where in the curses, among the curses that the Jewish people receive if they don't keep the Torah, it says, V'ayita meshuggah mimarei necha asher tiret. You will be, and I put the word, driven mad from the sights that your eyes will see. So that's one of the first places, and it's the only place that I could find in the Torah itself that speaks at all about being somehow out of one's mind. The other two examples are both from Shmuel. The first one we just alluded to, Shaul HaMelech definitely was at times in his life, you know, I don't know how modern terms would call it, depression, some sort of bipolar problem, but he was definitely at times very depressed. And the citation number 2 there says, the Ruach Hashem Sara Me'im Shaul, the Spirit of God left Shaul, Ubiatatu Ruach Ra'a Me'it Hashem, and instead he was invaded by some sort of evil spirit or dark feelings or some sort of depression. And they said, let us get somebody to play music for you, and that will lift your spirits. And of course, they went and got David. And then citation number three is David himself was in the area of Gat, and he was in the area of Achish Melech Gat, a Gentile area, and he was running away from Shaul. And one of the people notified the king, by the way, you see this guy over here? That's David who killed Goliath. He's the hero of the Jews. Let's go get him. So that is what preceded the psukim that we have here. It says, Vayasem David et hadvarim ha'ila bilavavo. David took this very seriously. He was in danger. Vayiram me'od, he was very afraid. Mipnei Achish Melech Gat, because of what the king of Gat could do to him. Vayishano et ta'amo be'enehem. This is a very loose translation. He changed his demeanor in front of them. He feigned himself mad in their hands. I'm reading the English part now. And scrabbled on the doors. I don't know what that means. I don't think he was playing Scrabble, but he was scrabbling on the doors. And he let his spittle fall down his beard. He was pretending to be crazy. And Achish, this is one of the great lines in Tanakh, Pasuk 16, Chaser Meshugaim Ani. I don't have enough crazy people around me. I need more, forget it. I'm not interested in this guy. Okay, there's a very famous Pasuk in Tanakh. So that's all we have in Tanakh. There are a few other places where the word Meshuga is used with regard to, I think, Hosea. It comes a couple times, but there's not really very much in the Torah, and it's certainly not defined exactly what it is. The only thing we have, yes?
You had said ahead of time that some of what you were going to say was not going to be politically correct,
right.
But it seems like even within the psukim, it's very not politically correct. You know, like that when Shaul has these episodes of mental illness, you know, it's that Hashem's spirit is leaving him, and this evil spirit is coming upon him. It's almost like, you know, the Navi itself is, you know, is assigning like a moral judgment to the
Well, I, yeah, you're right. It sounds that way. Although I think as we're going to see, everybody struggles with how to define this. How do we, what terminology can we use to define it? It's even to this day. You know, I know that those of you who are familiar with these terms, so the DSM-5 just came out, which is the directory of all kinds of mental diseases and problems. There's a lot of struggle even among mental health professionals in how to define the various types of mental problems that people deal with. There is no one term insanity anymore. It's a whole bunch of other types of syndromes, and from what I can tell, at least in my little bit of studying of this stuff. So now let's go to the Talmud and see what the Talmud has to say about it. Now in the Talmud, we do find the word, not Meshuga, we find the word Shote. Now the word Shote in modern Hebrew just means a fool or a simpleton. It's not really someone who's insane. But in the Torah, and even in the Talmud, at times, One rabbi will say, especially when he's talking to someone who's a tzduki, someone who did not believe in Torah Sheval Peh, they'll call him a shote. So, which means a fool. It doesn't mean you're crazy. It means you're a fool. But when the Torah, when the Gemara talks about cheresh, shote, v'katan, these are three individuals who are, let's call it, mentally incompetent, who have, nowadays they say diminished capacity. There's all kinds of terminology that used. These people are the ones that we are concerned about halachically. Cheresh, shote, v'katan. So that terminology, if you look at paragraph 2, appears over 100 times throughout Shas. Thank God for computers. We can check these things now. And I counted at least 100 times, if not many more, where this appears in all sorts of situations. These three are exempt from mitzvos. They have no obligations and no punishments if they do something wrong, if they do an avera, because they lack da'at. What is da'at? Da'at is understanding. They are mentally diminished, and therefore they don't really understand what they're doing. They don't relate. They have an alternative reality, if you will. They're not relating to the world the way we are, and therefore they're exempt from everything. Their transactions are also null and void. They cannot buy things. They cannot sell things. So that is the Cheresh Shote V'Katan, and it appears everywhere. Yes?
You say that the the translation says various mitzvot. It doesn't say all mitzvot.
The truth is it's all mitzvot. Maybe this translation is not so hot. Okay? So, cheresh, what is a cheresh? Cheresh is someone who is deaf and mute. Cannot hear, cannot speak. Are they insane? No, they're not insane. It's just that we cannot communicate with them. And one of the Meforshim calls them a suffek shote. We're not sure what's going on. Now, obviously, nowadays, people who are deaf and mute can learn to use sign language, and sign language counts. The Ketav Sofer, the son of the Chatam Sofer in the late 1700s, went to a school in Austria, a school of Jewish boys in Austria, and saw that they had learned to sign to each other. This was not American Sign Language, it was probably German Sign Language because it's in Austria. And he saw that they were really communicating with each other, and he went out and bought them all tefillin, because up to then they had not been wearing tefillin, because they thought they were putter from the mitzvah of tefillin. But he said, no, these people are communicating, they are now chayev to wear tefillin. But we're talking about someone who is totally unable to communicate in any way, in any normal way with, and again, normal in quotation marks, with us. So that is a cheresh. A katan is a minor. And even American society understands that minors, not that they have diminished capacity, but we don't let them enter into various business transactions or anything like that because they don't yet understand how the world works. And the Torah also has a definition. Bar and bat mitzvah is the cutoff point. Before bar and bat mitzvah, they are pater mikala mitzvot. And after bar and bat mitzvah, they are chayiv mitzvot. So that's why katan is in there. So that's also pretty easy to define. The question is, what is the definition of a shota? So first of all, the halacha. Paragraph 4 quotes a pasuk in Vayikra. This is the mitzvah that if someone sees or hears something that requires testimony, that is, they are now a witness to some sort of a crime or a transaction, they have a mitzvah to give their testimony. It says, "V'nefesh ki techeta," if a soul will sin, "v'shama kol Allah," and they will hear the sound of an oath. What it means is they are told, "You were a witness. We want you to come and testify, and we make you swear that you are a witness." Oh, v'hu eid, and that person is a witness. Oh, ra'ah, or he saw what happened. Oh, yada, or he knows of it. Im lo yagid, if he refuses to testify, v'nasa avono. That's a sin. That's a law in the Torah. You are supposed to give testimony. There's a mitzvah to give testimony. There's an aveira if you don't give testimony. So now, based on this pasuk, the Tosefta, which is like a Mishnah, it's a part of the Mishnaic canon, takes the pasuk apart. V'hu eid, this is paragraph 5, V'hu eid, if he was a witness, and let's look at the English because it'll go easier, it'll go faster. And he was a witness means he must be qualified to testify. There are rules. If someone is, for example, a known Mechalel Shabbat, we cannot let him take an oath that he is going to tell the truth. He doesn't believe in the oath to the Torah. He doesn't believe in God. If he worships idols, if he's a professional gambler, he cannot be a witness because he is easily bribable. He does things for money. So that's what it means to be qualified to testify. And he heard, Rishama, excludes someone deaf, says the Braita. Or he saw, excludes someone blind, cannot be a witness. Or he knew, excludes the Shote. Shote doesn't know what's going on. If he does not testify, he shall bear his sin, excludes someone who is mute, who cannot testify anyway, cannot give oral testimony. So that is the halacha. It doesn't say what a shota is, it tells us what the rules are. What's interesting, in the over 100 places all over the Talmud Bavli that talks about chere, shota, v'katan, there's only one place that defines what a shota is. And the definition, as we will see, is very questionable. And that's the Gemara Chagiga. Chagiga is one of the more obscure tractates of the Talmud. It deals with various mitzvot associated with the regalim, the shalosh regalim. And it says, source number 6 on page 2, at the top, Hakol Chayavin Bereiya, all, and it means all men, are chayav to do the mitzvah of Reiya, that is to be Ola Leregel, to see and be seen in the Beit HaMikdash. You bring a korban, an Olat Reiya. You bring a korban Ola, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to do that. Chutz, with the exception of Cheresh, Shote, V'Katan, again, the three. And Rashi says, Delav b'nei Deyaninu, these are not people who have dat, Upturin mitzvot. They are exempt from all mitzvot. Okay, the Gemara then takes this on and says, paragraph 7, Tanu Rabbanan, Ezehu Shote, finally, what exactly is a Shote? This is the only place in Masechet Chagiga that deals with this issue. What exactly is it? Says Rashi again, who is the Shote Ha'amur b'chol makom, that is discussed everywhere, Shepatur min ha-mitzvot, who is exempt from mitzvot, umin ha-onesh, and if he does something wrong, he is not punished, ve'ein kinyano kinyan, his acquisitions are null and void, ve'ein memkaro memkar, and his sales are null and void. He can't buy anything, he can't sell anything. No transactions, no business transactions, no mitzvot. Who is this person? So it gives you three definitions. Hayotze yechidi balayla, someone who goes out alone at night. I read that and I said, uh-oh. I've been known to do that.
That really applies today.
Vehalan bebeit hakvarot, someone who sleeps in a cemetery. Vehamekareya et ksuto, and someone who tears his clothes. That's it. There's your definition of a shote. Now, at this point, let's skip down to the English, and we'll go a little faster again.
Does that mean does all three?
Exactly. More? Look what the Gemara says. Now, first of all, you should be impressed that I have those little numbers 1, 2, 3 in the English. It took a lot of fiddling on the computer to get those in there. If I'm proud of anything, I'm proud of those numbers. Okay. So now, Rav Huna said they must all be done together to render someone a shote. You have to do all three things. You have to go out at night, alone. You have to sleep in a cemetery, you have to tear your clothes. Rabbi Yochanan said, even if he does only one of them, would render him a shote. So the Gemara says, well, what are we talking about? And look at what I've underlined. And this is where the problem comes in. If he does them in an insane manner, so we just became circular. We just redefined ourselves, and we don't have a definition anymore. So if he does these things in an insane manner, then even one is also proof that he is a shote. If he does not do them in an insane manner, then even if he does all of them, it would prove nothing, because he could explain why he did them, that there is a reason for why he went and slept in the cemetery. What that might be, I don't know, but perhaps he has some reason. Says the Gemara, actually it is a case where he does them in an insane manner. Again, what does that mean? Doesn't say. But each individual act done insanely could be explained as rational if he did them in a, if it, I'm sorry, but each individual act done insanely could be explained as rational. But if a person does all of these acts insanely, then he must truly be insane. And then they come up with a fourth thing. So where Papa said, if Rav Huna had heard the following halacha, who is called a shote, one who destroys or loses all that is given to him, he would have retracted his previous definition. That's the real definition. So then the Gemara asked, when Rav Huna would have retracted, would he have retracted only with regard to the man who tore his garment, because that's like something you destroy, or would he have thrown out all his three cases? Says the Gemara, take it. We don't know. That's it. That's all we have in the Gemara, and it has to be done in an insane manner, and we are left back again without really a definition. That's a problem. And that's all there is in all of Talmud Bavli. Talmud Rishalmi has a very similar piece of Gemara, but it says the same thing, and that's why I didn't include it in the citations here. So now let's go to the halacha, to the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, and see what they have to say about things. And the Rambam gets a little more helpful, because the Rambam, who was a doctor, also understood that we're dealing with a situation that's very hard to pin down. So the Rambam, and again, I'll read the English, Halacha 9, these are the halachot of Hilchot Edut, the halachot of who can be a witness. Why did the Rambam choose to put his definitions in there? Well, we said that we had the pasuk before about what are the laws of someone who must give testimony. So Halacha 9, a shote is not acceptable as a witness according to the Torah, for he is not obligated in the mitzvot. We are speaking not only about a shote who won, and all of a sudden we have different things. Goes around naked. Two, destroys utensils. And three, throws stones. So we came up with two new things, walking around naked and throwing stones. But also four, anyone, and here we get finally into some psychology. Because before we had just actions that could be defined or not defined. Four, anyone whose mind is disturbed and continually confused when it comes to certain matters, although he can speak and ask questions to the point regarding other matters. But there are some things that he's, in certain areas, he's just totally confused. You talk to him and you say, whoa, this guy is off the wall. He's out of it. But in other areas, he would be fine. Such a person is considered unacceptable as a witness and is in the category of shotim. So we got a little psychology in there. And then he goes further. People who are very feeble-minded, and the word used by the Rambam is the word peti, which in modern Hebrew can be referred to someone who is mentally challenged, if you will. Retarded is another word. I know that's not completely correct. I don't know all the words. But that in modern Hebrew is called a peti. So people who are very feeble-minded, who, number five, do not understand matters that contradict each other. They cannot perform simple logic. Two concepts that contradict each other, they don't understand that they're contradictory. And are six, incapable of comprehending a concept as it would be comprehended by people at large, are considered among the shotim. So that's people who are very, very feeble-minded. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that, for example, people who are very capable of taking care of themselves, but would be like Down syndrome or something like that, where they are functioning, are chayiv in all the mitzvot, and I get aliyot in shul, and are could be considered full Jews. There's nothing different with them. But here we're talking about people who are very, very much disturbed. This also applies to people who are continually, number seven, unsettled, eight, compulsive, and nine, deranged. Now these are translation of the Hebrew, where the you can look it back at the Hebrew and see how I've translated it. I translated it based not on my own translation, but I got a translation. I can't tell you right now where I got it from, not that I don't want to, I just don't remember. But then the Rambam adds a very important line. This matter is dependent on the judgment of the judge, because it is impossible to describe the mental and emotional states of people in a text. And therefore the judge is going to have to make a decision. When a witness comes who seems to the judge as being somehow off, the judge has to say, I'm sorry, we can't accept you as a witness.
But a lot of criteria subjective.
It's very subjective. It's all subjective. And that's the problem. But at least the Rambam takes this head on and says, here are some things you can look at. Is the person constantly jumpy, compulsive? Has to, you know, and compulsive means that you know, one of the tests, I was reading some of the legal terminology here, because in legal terms you can be considered innocent by virtue of insanity. And the question is, would you have done this act had a policeman been standing right next to you? So someone who is compulsive is going to do the act no matter, he has to do it. Even if a policeman is there and it's going to be detrimental to him, he's going to get arrested, he has to do the act. That's the kind of compulsion we're talking about. So all these definitions, again, are very difficult, but at least the Rambam gives us some manner of dealing with it and says to the judge, you're going to have to decide, because every case is different. These things are very hard to pin down in writing, and therefore the Rambam says, I'm going to do the best I can, as he did with all the little numbers there. We came up with nine different things, but and they're not the same as the Gemara and Chagiga. And therefore the Keset Mishnah, which I did not translate, which is citation number 9, says, and I'll just summarize it, that the Rambam is of the opinion that the three things in Chagiga, that is, you go out alone at night, and you sleep in a cemetery, and you tear your clothing, are merely examples. These are not the definition, but merely examples of deranged thinking, and therefore the Rambam adds his own things, and other people can add other things. So said the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah is written by Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, and then we have note number 10, or item number 10, in the Shulchan Aruch itself, Hilchot Gerushin. So, I'll read a little bit in Hebrew. Mishaita ruach ra'ah meva'atetoto. If someone has been seized by an evil spirit, the amar keshehitchil bo acholi, he says to shluchim, he wants people to do something for him. He's been seized by this spirit. He says, "Kitu get le ishti, write a divorce document for my wife." What? I know. We have to. When do I have to finish? Oi. But we started about 10 minutes late, so I'm going to take some. All right.
There's a 15-minute
break. Okay, good. We're gonna have to go quickly now. But anyway, he says, "Write the get for my wife." We don't listen to him because he's been seized by an evil spirit, and he is not of sound mind. The same law would apply if he was intoxicated to the degree of Lot, who had no idea who he was having relations with. Didn't realize it was his daughters. If he's so intoxicated, also, we don't listen to him, he also falls into this category. The husband must be of sound mind when he writes a get. It's also true that the wife must be of sound mind to receive a get. And if she is not, and I have it later on, then we cannot divorce her. And that's Halacha 11. Let's do the English. A husband can divorce his wife against her will as far as the Torah is concerned. However, the Ramah adds, which is the Ramah was Rav Moshe Iserlish, who lived much later than Rav Yosef Karo, and was Rav Yosef Karo, all the Sephardim follow Rav Yosef Karo, the Ashkenazim follow the Ramah. Even if he has no money to pay off her ketubah and her dowry, and he wants to give her a get, he's going to have to pay the money. Nevertheless, the wife cannot prevent the get from being valid. She must accept the get and then sue her husband, or ex-husband, for the various monies that he owes her. This is the law. It is the law min ha-Torah. However, Rabbeinu Gershom, you may have heard of him, the Cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom issued an excommunication, a Cherem, against anyone who divorces his wife against her will, unless she violated the standards of morality, which was not for this shir. Even if the husband plans to pay off the ketubah in this day and age, he cannot divorce his wife against her will. However, if she is insane and cannot take care of herself, the husband cannot divorce her until she becomes well. All right. Now, the other thing I wanted to add before we get into the get of cleaves is the issue of someone who's partially insane. Is there such a concept? It seems that the Rambam holds there is not. The Rambam said, as soon as someone is insane in one of these areas, he is disqualified from being a witness. Cannot be a witness at all. Now, I'm quoting in paragraph 12 from Rabbi Breidowitz, who you may have heard him, he comes to Chicago every year to give a speech for the Eish HaTorah people, is it?
Or
Sameach. I mixed those up. He's also a professor of law at the University of Maryland. Wrote a whole article, which you can look up on the internet. In the article, he talks about a partial shota. It is possible for someone to labor under certain delusions that impair his sense of reality in certain areas of his life, but to be able to function normally in other areas. For example, a person might believe that his car is possessed by aliens from Mars, who are planning to abduct him if he opens the car door. As a result, he will neither enter the car nor allow others to do so. But as long as he takes public transportation, he feels safe and is able to hold a job, raise a family with minimal disruption. That could happen. Is shota a unitary concept that once behavior indicates a condition of shota, the person lacks capacity in all areas, or can it be divided? So he says, that appears to be a major argument here. The Rambam, as I told you, seems to hold that we can, that we don't separate it, but it will be the top of the page 4. It will recall that the basic text defining Shota, passage in Chagiga, in itself indicates that irrational behavior in one area is indeed sufficient to confer Shota status. The commentary of Tosfot states, however, that such a finding is merely in the nature of a rebuttal presumption. That is, if and only if we have no proof of competence in other areas, and we know that he's kind of weird, politically correct again, in a few areas, we will consider him a Shota in all areas. But in fact, Tosfot holds that if he's okay in other areas, then in those areas he will still remain to be considered a full-fledged Jew. And so says the Noda Yehuda, Rabbi Cheskel Landau, who will be important for the Get of Cleves. He feels that there is such a thing where in one area a person might be considered competent, and in another area he's a Shota. And for your reading pleasure, I'm not going to discuss it, Rav Moshe Feinstein, in his Sefer of She'elot and Tshuvot, received a question about a man. Read that little paragraph. A man had the delusion, if you see where that paragraph is, that he was the Mashiach. And his role was to perfect the world and bring it back to the state that existed before the sin of Adam HaRishon. Based on that belief, he would parade about the street without clothing. This is in Russia. A little cold, I don't know. Since Adam and Eve needed no clothing in Gan Eden. In all other respects, the person was lucid and rational. His wife's family demanded that he grant a divorce to his wife, and they presented the question to Rav Moshe. So in most respects, you could have a normal conversation with him. But he's Adam HaRishon, and he's standing there without any clothing. So you can read about what Rav Moshe wrote. And just interesting enough, the bottom paragraph, law.com, has a definition of insanity, which sounds like the Rambam wrote it. Mental illness of such a severe nature that a person cannot distinguish fantasy from reality, cannot conduct his or her affairs due to psychosis, or is subject to uncontrollable impulsive behavior. Okay, let's get to the Get of Cleves. The Get of Cleves happened in 1766, 700 years after the Battle of Hastings, there's our history, 10 years before the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and it took place in Germany, and Cleves is a city on the German-Dutch border. And let's read the first paragraph on page 5. Elul 8, 55, 26. It's interesting, Elul 8 is very early, right? It's what?
Like this year. Early.
August 14th, right. So Isaac, or Itzik, the son of Eliezer Nyberg of Mannheim, married Leah, daughter of Jacob Gunzhausen of Bonn. Now, they got married. They're having Sheva Brachas, and on the Shabbos following the wedding, the bridegroom took 94 gold crowns of the dowry, and he disappeared on Shabbos. He took a big pile of money, and he ran away. After an extensive search, he was found 2 days later in the house of a non-Jew in the village of Fahrenheim, which is not far away, and they brought him home. And after that, he kind of behaved okay. But then a few days later, he informed his wife's family he could no longer stay in Germany. Basically, he said, they're after me. Sounds like paranoia, we would call it. Because he's in grave danger, and he was, God, I have to move to England. I'm leaving. And he said, look, this is my problem. They're after me. So he said to his wife, I'm willing to give you a divorce. I don't want you to be in Aguna. And I'm going to let you have all the marital assets. You keep all the money. I got to get out of here. They're after me. I got to get out of here. They accepted his offer. They were traveling back wherever they were going. They wound up in Cleves. Cleves had a Besdin, and the Rav in Cleves was Mesader the Get. He said, man, seems pretty normal to me. And he arranged the Get, and on the 22nd of Elul, so we're talking about not that long after they got married, 2 weeks, right? They had a Get. Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yisrael, Ben Eliezer Lipschitz, the Av Bezdin of Cleves, effected the divorce. Leah returned to Mannheim, Yitzchak went to England. All would have been okay, except the father of the man, Yitzchak's father, said, wait a second, this is all wrong. When Isaac's father learned of the divorce, he said, this is all some kind of trumped up thing. They're trying to get the money out of my poor son, who's insane, and he couldn't help himself. He ran to Mannheim to invalidate the get on the grounds that, in his view, the husband was not of sound mind when he gave the get. And this Rabbi Tess of Mannheim went to the Beis Din, the big Beis Din in Frankfurt, which was the main Jewish town. And the Beis Din of Frankfurt ruled that the husband was insane and the get is null and void. And I'm reading the paragraph that starts when Isaac's father. So the Beis Din of Frankfurt, headed by Rabbi Avram ben Levi Hirsch of Lissau, agreed that he was insane, demanded that the rabbi of Cleves rescind his get, declare it null and void, that the woman is still a married woman, and they sent to other rabbis to agree with that, but they said, no, we think the get is good. And the rabbi of Cleves said, I don't have to listen to the rabbis of Frankfurt. Yes?
To get married, do you have to be of sound mind?
Yes. Yes, you do.
Some would argue.
Good question. No, you do. You do have to be. You do.
He got married 2 weeks before, or 3 months before.
2 weeks before.
Well, now it's later.
Well, now it's later. Okay.
Now it's later, but then he entered into a contract.
Well, let's think of what exactly did he do as far as the facts that we know of. On the Shabbos of the Sheva Brachos, he ran away taking money on Shabbos. Now, this is a supposedly a religious individual. He was Mechalel Shabbos. He carried money off to some Gentile's house, and they found him and brought him back. And then he said, I got to get out of here. And he gave a get. What was he before? It seems like at the wedding, he was perfectly fine, it sounds like. That there would have been no reason to think at the wedding itself that he was insane. We're going to see more here. Now, both sides appealed to all the rabbinical authorities of the time. The rabbi of Cleves received the support of almost all the leading scholars of the generation, said the get was a good get. They're divorced. We have Reb Shaul ben Aryeh Leib Lowenstam, the chief rabbi of Amsterdam, Reb Yaakov Emden, who is one of the Meforshim in the Gemara, Reb Yecheskel Lando, the Node of Yehuda, who was the Gadol Hador at the time, Reb Yitzchak Horwitz of Hamburg, Reb David Frankel, chief rabbi of Dessau, Reb Aryeh Leib Ginsberg, known as the Shagas Aryeh, also one of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim, the Sidrei Tahara. People are known in the yeshiva world by the name of their books. I don't think Dickens was ever called the Tale of Two Cities. They called him Dickens. But somehow, rabbis are known by the names of their books. So, the Merkabas HaMishnah and all kinds of other scholars, everybody sided that said with the rabbi of Cleves, the get was a good get. And only the Beis Din of Frankfurt said, no, this get was totally null and void. It's always bothered me that none of these people except the rabbi of Cleves ever met the man. And how they were able to render judgment is very bothersome. And I've been asking various rabbis, how is that possible? How do you render judgment on something you've never met the guy who you're declaring sane or insane? Yes, question.
In our time, there are books that come out that don't meet certain rabbanim's approval. And people sign letters against the books, often without ever having looked at them. And communication is so far superior to hundreds of years ago.
It's a problem. It shouldn't be done, I think. Although what I've heard from some of the people have said, the Beis Din of Frankfurt is definitely a problem. They are saying 100% this man was insane. They never met him. All the other rabbis who are saying the get is a good get are saying we're going to rely on the rabbi of Cleves, who knows what he's doing. And furthermore, as we'll see, there are various halachic arguments. There are reasons to think that he really was okay and that the get should be okay. In other words, this is in our opinion, given that the rabbi of Cleves knows what he's doing, there are other circumstances that would be proofs for him to say, yes, he was sane. The Beis Din of Frankfurt, however, is very problematic. Yes?
So the the rabbis who wanted to invalidate the get, what were they suggesting would happen?
Okay, we're going to look at the arguments. I just wanted to point out, I got 5 minutes. We'll take 10.
5 and a half.
Okay. 7. Okay. So, paragraph 15. Okay. Paragraph 15 is based on Wikipedia heard of the Get of Cleves. I went on the internet because there's a sefer by Yitzchak Zilberstein where I learned a lot of this, who brings down most of the history. He is the son-in-law of Rebbe Yashiv. So then I went on the internet to see what does the internet know about the Get of Cleves, and Wikipedia knew all about it, which is pretty amazing. Anyway, so what was the halachic discussion? Let's skip down to paragraph 17, the reasons for voiding the get. What did the rabbis of Frankfurt say? First of all, the husband claimed that when the husband said he could no longer stay in Germany because he's in grave danger, and that he was obliged to immigrate to England, that's clearly the statement of someone insane and in the grip of a dark fear. And remember, the Shulchan Aruch talked about a dark fear. Yeah. Number two, would a sane person do something like this, move so far away without telling his father? Number three, he gave away all of his property to the wife in the divorce settlement, and that falls under the category of someone, we said in Chagiga, number four, someone who loses or destroys all of his property. This guy gave it all away. And number four, the people of Mannheim who heard about this guy running away on Shabbos with the gold coins were all convinced that he was out of his mind. What Jew would do that? Those are the arguments of the Beis Din of Mannheim. Some of it is a little shaky. And bottom line, the husband was insane. When he issued the get, it should be declared null and void. Now, the Mesader HaGet of Lifshitz and the rabbis who agreed with him said, even according to the Rambam, who says that once you're an insane in one area, you are insane in all areas, he says he requires that da'ato mishubeshet tamid, the person's mind is continually confused. In the case of the Get of Cleves, the husband did what he did only once. That wasn't continuous. Number two, Rav Saul of Amsterdam quotes the Shulchan Aruch that the three types of behavior mentioned in the Gemara are examples. And writes Rav Saul, anyone with a brain in his head can understand that the husband's desire for going to England, while it may be ill-advised, does not come close to the standard of insanity set by the examples in Chagiga. Furthermore, the husband's seemingly irrational fear of remaining in Germany is also not so far removed from normal human behavior. The Gemara talks about people who sometimes are seized by a fear, and it says because something has happened in Shamayim with your malach, and therefore somebody could be seized with fear. Then, says Rav Saul of Amsterdam, the Gemara Chagiga says that the three types of behavior in the Gemara must be done in an insane manner. In other words, it has to be clear to everyone viewing the behavior that it was done with a deranged and confused mind. But if at the time of the behavior it was not clear that there was any confusion or derangement, and the person seemed to be acting normally, that doesn't justify to call him a shota. Seemed like he was afraid of something, and he went and did something about his fear. He ran away. Then, says Rabbi Saul of Amsterdam, we have to suspect that there was never anything wrong with the husband. But he acted insanely like David HaMelech because he just didn't happen to like her. He said he was married for a few days. He said, uh-oh, what did I get into here? And he pretended to be insane so that to convince her to accept a get. As proof, said the chief rabbi of Amsterdam, when the husband went to London, after that we never heard anything about him as being acting strange at all. And therefore, we should suspect that something else was in his mind. Now, the note of Yehuda, the Gadol Ador, Rabbi Yechezkel Lando, number 5, said, the fact that the people of Mannheim thought that he was insane doesn't really mean anything. He says, the Rashba tells us, this is toward the end of paragraph 5, that once a person starts to get well, even if he's not fully rehabilitated, as long as he doesn't tear off his clothing or do any other clearly insane behaviors, he is to be considered sane. Therefore, when he gave the get, he was okay. Furthermore, he said, why did the Rambam bring this halacha in the laws of edut, of being a witness? He says, because the laws of being a witness are different. There is no such thing as partial insanity with regard to being a witness. Just like if you're a professional gambler, you can't be a witness. You can't have any sort of mental aberration at all to be a witness. But as far as being considered a shote on your own for all other mitzvot, there is the concept of partial insanity, and therefore when the husband gave the get, he was okay. So now, what was the outcome? Let's just finish it up. I got a 1 minute signal. So, you can take this home and read the details because they're kind of interesting. So according to one account, this Isaac Nyberg, the husband, came back from London to Germany to remarry his wife. The usual brachos of the wedding were not said, because he can't say Harat Mekudeshet Li, because they're married already. They're still married. The get was void. And therefore what he did was, he said, Harat Adayin Mekudeshet Li, okay. So this attempt to tag a happy end on the Cleves get saga has no substantiation in the sources. This last section was written by Dr. Dov Levitan of Bar Ilan. The halachic consequences were that rabbis became much more careful in checking, making sure that the people they're dealing with, both in getting married and getting divorced, are really of sound mind. And otherwise they would say, sorry, we're going to have nothing to do with this. Unless they really feel strongly that everybody's okay, you walk away. You have nothing to do with it. Okay, last paragraph on page 7. Worthy of special note are the remarks of the Gadol Hador, Rabbi Yecheskel Landau, the author of the Note of Yehuda, who not only proclaimed that the divorce was valid, but that he himself would perform the wedding for whoever might wish to marry the woman. This remark infuriated the Frankfurt Bezdin, you can imagine. But this is the Gadol Hador speaking. And he said, I think it's a good get. I will perform the wedding for her. And as a result, read the last paragraph on page 8, this get rocked the Jewish and rabbinic world of 18th century Europe. These letters were going back and forth, and people were arguing, this is what everybody talked about in shul. When you're not supposed to talk, this is what everybody, this was, instead of television, this was better entertainment than anything. And the people of Frankfurt made the following declaration. First of all, they burned the books of the Note of Yehuda. Amazing thing. And then they said, they made the declaration, neither the rabbi of Prague, Rabbi Landau, nor his sons and grandsons, and likewise his sons-in-law, those who marry his daughters or granddaughters, shall receive an appointment in our community. They are banned from Frankfurt. Yes.
Is this related to the controversy with Rabbi Yonasan Eichholz?
No, not at all. 2 seconds. Indeed, when an opening came for the Besden of Frankfurt, they only had 3 applicants because everybody else agreed that the get was a good get. And then I just tell you what's at the end. This is the front page of that sefer dealing with the whole issue. Right? It says, get me Cleva. Cleva is Cleves. And then the last page is just a table of contents of all the letters. This is one page of the table of contents. All the letters that were flying back and forth among the rabbis, who's right, who's wrong, and so on. It's a very interesting story. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm being told I'm done, so that's it. Okay.
Everyone is welcome to head directly across the hall and grab a cup of coffee or a drink.